Discussions Podcast. Today's episode is about role-playing games. So grab your D20s and character sheets, and prepare thyself for adventure. Also, the dudes will be playing a game on the podcast, so drop them a line on Facebook, email, or Twitter, and tell them what setting you would like to see for the game. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've slumbered for long enough. I have a village to lay to ash and death.
Hello, my friend. Stay a while and listen.
Okay, you can edit it.
I had a mouth stroke. All right. Welcome to the Dude Discussions Podcast, episode number 5, Cinco de Podcast. We're back. Full disclosure, the podcast curse finally struck us. That's why you guys didn't get a bonus episode this Friday or Saturday, because sometimes you record an episode and it doesn't pick up your voice, and you spend 12 hours editing. So that's what I did. So hopefully this works. Well, hopefully we still have the same high energy, as always. Adam, you're here.
Yep. I am.
Oh, alas? Why the alas?
Alas, because you have to settle for me.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Just fishing for compliments, my friend.
I see.
No matter.
James, what have you been doing this week? Did you get a superpower from the chemical spill?
No lung cancer either. It's just kind of been a wash all the way around.
All right. Nothing but happiness from you. Hunter.
Actually, my girlfriend has been interested in RPGs, so I was explaining Pathfinder to her all weekend.
What? Congratulations!
Hopefully,
oh, yeah, thank you.
Hopefully that works out. I've yet to have a girlfriend play a game with the boyfriend, and it's ever worked out.
Want me to record it?
Oh, God, yeah. Do that.
Yes. Recorded.
Full disclosure, though, get her permission.
Well, we're here to discuss RPGs, not Hunter's weird
proclivity.
Yeah, proclivities for peeping Tomery. Anyway, RPGs, that's what we're here to talk about today.
Yes.
Let's just get right into it. Loremaster Adam, you have some trivia for us?
I do. I have a bit of trivia. Some to get us all started on this deal, but also some that Dave and the others here might bring back and explain later on in the podcast. So if you bear with me here, 1974 saw Dungeons and Dragons released onto the world. Did you know what else happened in 1974, Dave? You want to take a wild guess? A wild stab at the same year that we got RPG great?
Saturday Night Fever? Question mark?
Yeah, Brady Bunch was canceled.
Oh. Well, they're both great things. So you kind of have to supplant one with the other. Like, the Brady Bunch goes out, D&D shows up.
We balance it back out in a horribly negative thing that pop culture remembers to this day. Robert DeFeo Jr. murdered his whole family in a town called Amityville.
Oh, that guy. Okay, the one who's responsible for the 17,000 shitty remakes of that story.
Roughly 17,000 remakes. What game did Gygax invent before D&D? It was a minis game based on medieval warfare. Came out in 71. It's called Chainmail.
That's right.
Now, finally, and you'll be glad this is the last one, there exists an RPG called Fatal. F-A-T-A-L. It stands for From Another Time, Another Land, which actually exists. This game actually exists, despite requiring you to roll stats for areola diameter and hue, and the number of hoops you release based on whether you were struck in the anus or, separately, the rectum. absolutely the worst thing. I did more research on that than I anticipated knowing. But that's it for the RPG trivia for the day.
All right. Well, we learned a lot of things. So how'd you get started, Hunter?
With you guys, actually, you and James. My first ever experience with roleplay was a Pathfinder game with you being the game master, actually. I've only played Pathfinder.
But James, how'd you get started?
Also with you and some other people in college. I hear experimentation is normal.
It's
we
true.
Experimented with RPGs.
Could have been worse.
Some people kiss the same sex. James just plays RPGs.
What I remember discovering Pathfinder was you saying, oh, my brother found this system, he's going to bring it over. And then Justin showed up with a tactical bag that he would use to transport weapons for the military filled with books. So he was pulling them out like it was Mary Poppins' goddamn handbag.
How'd you get started in this great nerd hobby of ours, Adam?
Via board game, actually. If I can harken back to holding a figurine in one's hand on a fold-out board game instead of a hexagonal paper. HeroQuest, 1989, Milton Bradley.
Yes.
Anybody familiar with that?
Oh, yeah. I cut my teeth on that game as well. Awesome. Yeah, the HeroQuest board game, that's awesome. I'd been trying to, like, locate it, but sadly you're going to pay at least probably $400 on eBay for a decent base set.
How much did you say the expansions were?
The expansions are worth way more because they didn't print those. Those were, like, more limited runs because the game wasn't, like, mass popular. Because back then, being a geek or a nerd wasn't as crazy and in style as it is today, so that it didn't sell as much. But the rarest one was probably the Elven expansion. They did an expansion for each of the four heroes in the game, and the Elven one is, like, $1,200 for a decent for a decent shape one, and that one I think only released in the UK because the company who put it out was based over there, so they got expansions that were region exclusive that we didn't get.
Good God, $1,200! You might as well just build a gaming machine like a PC. Like, I love the game, but I'm not paying $1,200 for any kind of anything.
One of our buddies from high school has a copy. Chaz actually has a copy.
What
he had? Well. He had one. He's since married and had kids, and I think I had talked to Anthony about it. I'm like, hey, see if Chaz maybe wants to sell that, because I'd give him at least $200 for it. But he let his kids play with it, and when you let kids,
they're gone.
Yeah, when you let a kid play with something, it's over. So
the heads are all bitten off.
And I think what happened to mine is my parents just got rid of it in a move. Because we had a lot of stuff, and we moved a lot, and so it just disappeared one day. So I think my mom just straight up just got rid of a bunch of our shit and didn't tell us, because I have no idea what happened. What was your first pen and paper then?
Was D&D 2nd Edition. So, it was a little older, a little more, little meatier on the math. I remember walking into my my oldest brother's room when he wasn't in there, because I was Snoopy, and I found a book of rules, and I found a bag of dice, and they were dice that I'd never seen before in my life. They were weird shapes, and so I played with them a lot and then lost them outside, and he was very upset with me. But then he kind of introduced me to...
Oh, yeah. The old stuff is really, really punishing, too, depending on the class that you play. Like in 2nd Edition, the Wizard, you get one spell a day. That's it. And you... There's no resting to get it back. You can't cast that one spell multiple times. You get one spell, and you can cast that one spell once per day. And you also have 4 hit points. And that's where you stay for like 3
the
levels.
The original Clothy. Ugh.
It's brutal. But if you can somehow manage to survive the meat grinder that is playing a wizard, you by mid-game, you've broken the game. Like, it's... You are just a dealer of death, an exploder of worlds, if you can survive one spell and 4 hit points for like 3 levels.
It really establishes the gameplay party makeup, though, like you have your DPS and then your absolute requirement.
Oh, yeah, you can't play 2nd Edition without a healer. It's just not going to happen, unless you have a really bad or merciful DM, I guess. But I also got my start with the 2nd Edition. Well, technically the 1st Edition, but I kind of don't count that one because I only played one adventure of it, because my older cousins were playing and we were living with them, and I was doing the typical little kid thing. We're like, let me play, and they're like, no, you're the worst, you haven't even read Lord of the Rings, so you won't understand it. And then I went to my library around 11 something, around that age, and then checked out the entire, starting with The Hobbit and the Fellowship, Two Towers, Return of the King, and then read through them all in like 3 weeks-ish, maybe a month, something like that.
Oh. That blows my damn mind. Like, even now, even having loved the movies and read the books before, like, you start reading them, you're like, oh, God, it's this part.
It's not a good time. It's really slow and overhyped. I definitely prefer the movies over the books, for sure.
God damn, that's young to be tackling that kind of subject matter and that quickly.
I mean, I don't know how much of it I understood or retained. I was looking up a lot of words, hating every sentence that involved Tom Bombadil, but...
What's a shadow fat?
Well, you see, he's the Lord of Horses. So I did...
Oh, man.
So I blasted through that, and then they had to concede, and they let me play a session. And I don't even really remember what happened. The only thing that stands out is we were in a battle. I was playing the fighter, which, good on them, because you never... Honestly, you don't want your new players to do anything other than playing some kind of base-to-base. Not a whole lot of...
Melee combat.
Yeah, not a lot of complexities. Like, here you go. You can be a big, dumb warrior with a big, dumb sword.
Hit things. That's it.
So I remember getting into this fight, and back then it was all theater of the mind. So there's not... There weren't, like, maps or minis. I mean, I guess technically they could have, but they weren't that involved. So I had no idea. Like, I wasn't paying a lot of attention. So I attacked the guy, and then they made a roll, because apparently I just threw my greatsword, because I was standing nowhere next to the enemy. The DM was like, fuck it, you said you attacked him. So I threw my sword and scored my first critical hit, and then they were all shocked and amazed that I killed
him. So they wanted you out of the game. They tried to engineer it to get you out quickly,
because
they're awesome cousins like that. And you scored a critical hit, and they created a monster.
And they stopped playing. I mean, I'm sure they kept playing. They just never played at the house again because I was there. And I don't fault them for it because, and again, when you're that young, you don't quite have the attention span yet to really take it serious. But anyway, so after that, it was basically like you had talked about second edition. That's where I really got started. I had the rich friend who had all the things, but it was too lazy to run it. He's like, here, take all my source books and craft for us an adventure. So the two of us, very, just as bad as nerdy as you can get, just two dudes alone in his house, but playing a two-man RPG. So why do you guys think it's so popular? That you keep selling, they keep coming out with editions.
Ooh, my hand's in the air.
All right, we'll call on you.
That sense of accomplishment and victory of effort and reward that we, and I'm including myself, so I'm not being exclusionary or judgmental, but that we less physically adventurous types miss out on. You know, I'm not likely to be in the NFL. I'm not likely to ever play a major league game, nor am I ever likely to knock somebody out in the UFC. But I can attack a 12-foot ogre and probably get a couple of crits in there and get some reward. And I will physically feel, mentally, physiologically feel a sense of accomplishment and reward and be able to not ever even have to leave my damn chair.
What about you, James?
Man, should I just say ditto?
You're allowed.
Put the words out of your mouth.
You can quote Ghost with Patrick Swayze anytime you want on this podcast.
He says he loves you. He would never say that.
There's going to be shirtlessness and Unchained Melody. What about you, Hunter? What do you think this hobby is as popular as it is or continues?
Well, I feel like it's people like to create things, you know? I mean, that's probably why Legos are so popular, too. Especially for, like, at a young age, you got all these things to build stuff like Legos and coloring books. And maybe Dungeons & Dragons and roleplay games kind of bring that back out, you know?
Because only rich kids got to play with Legos growing up.
That is exactly what I'm saying, peasants.
I also played with Legos.
Well, we've established, we know that you're a rich kid. You have a turtle fence and a lordly manor. See, for me, I think it comes down to two things. Similar to what Adam said earlier, there's that sense of escapism, because we work 9 to 5, well, most people, and you've got kids and lives and things, and so for 3-4 hours a week, ever how long you play, it's your chance to get away and forget about bills and all of that, and cast some magic missiles into the darkness and eat some Cheetos and drink Mountain Dew with your bros. But the bigger thing is, it was for an imaginary lit class, and Dr. Bishop had old Tracy Hickman come and do a guest lecture.
Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman?
Yeah, he lives next town over. He talked about humans needing they basically have the three S's. So you got your sustenance, your shelter, and your story. And it's one of the most important things. Like, we're social animals. You tell stories all day long. When you talk to each other, you call people on the phone. Like, it's what we're doing now. We're telling stories so other people can listen to those stories. Role-playing is kind of a modern version of us gathering around the campfire, and we've painted with weird berry mixtures on the rocks, and like, this is how I slew the mammoth. It's a continuation of that aspect. I crafted this club of +5 wife unconsciousness.
Oh, God. Oh.
So I can drag her back to the cave and make her mine.
We had to take it to a dark place, dude.
What's everyone's favorite system?
My favorite, as opposed to my initial? Oh, I'm gonna go with third edition.
Oh, third edition. So I
kind of balance between third and 3.5, but I really think that it's kind of where my mind goes whenever I think of sitting down and playing a D&D game. I'm in that basement with the stale carpet, the stale dusty carpet smell, and the weird paneling on the walls, and it's way too dark for the one bulb above your head, and sitting down, and you're always trying to find that last character sheet that nobody scribbled on. Like, that's where my brain goes, and it was like third edition. So that to me is the most memorable and
positive memories in a place described to sound like an interrogation room.
It's weird, right?
I was gonna go with Uncle Touchy's naked puzzle basement, but interrogation room works too. Down here, you won't wear a shirt and you'll cry.
They all float down here, Dave.
Beep, beep, Richie. What about you, James? What's your favorite and why?
I spent the most time with Pathfinder, but my favorite is, not including the homebrew system, which we use, it's probably the Fate system.
Fate system?
Fate system, the Fate Quartz. Also, it was used for the Dresden Files RPG.
Oh, yeah. That's the easily generally applied. You can put it to a lot of different stuff. Is the Buffy on the Fate system too?
Yeah, I believe so.
What was your favorite then, Hunter?
I've only played two, actually. Pathfinder and what was it? World of Darkness, right. I'd go with Pathfinder, honestly.
I think you would like the system in World of Darkness more if you hadn't been playing Mage of the Ascension. Like, that's probably the wrong aspect of the World of Darkness to start in as. Like, you probably should have started as either vampire or werewolf. Like, Mage is pretty ridiculous and complicated.
I can kind of see that in the rule book, actually. Whenever you want to know something like what a praxis is, you have to look through the book and find the 5 pages that explain what a praxis is.
I would say my favorite was, I used to really like Pathfinder, but Pathfinder runs into a problem where it gets way complex mid to late game, so much so that if you've got any like novice players, it grinds the game to almost a near halt. And it's not their fault. I mean, there's 8-9 different rule books. I don't know. It gets really complex. It almost transforms into like a tabletop strategy minis combat game at that point. So if I had to choose like an existing system, probably just the old Westin games, Star Wars D6. Just,
oh, so many D6.
Yes. And I'm not even sure how.
Handfuls, pockets full of D6.
Bathtubs.
Like, that game causes you to, like, rather than, because we lived in rural Nevada, like, there were no stores. And so you didn't, like, we started playing that game and suddenly we needed like, oh man, we need like 40 D6 now. We don't have those, nor do we have a nerd store. So you would just cannibalize your family's entire board game collection. So they go to play Yahtzee and they're just like, what? We'll have to use imagination. Where'd all the D6 go?
Sorry, bubble, to get the D6 out.
Yeah. But other than that, one's probably more nostalgia than like actual, how good the actual system is. But honestly, the one that we made up is probably my new favorite because of how simple it is and how easy it is to adapt to any setting that you want to play in it.
I'm going to ask you, because I've never played it, I'm going to ask you to describe your homebrew system, because I think anybody who's listening to this podcast is probably going to have a little bit of exposure to RPGs. But before you do, can you describe for me what you meant by early game, mid game, and late game, and how you define those stages in an RPG?
Yeah, so in terms of like your MMO or your video game, or it's as your character advances. So the early game would be the early part, like levels 0 through 4 or 5, depending on your class. Like, different classes will hit the other sections varying, like, sooner or later than other classes. But essentially, early game is your early levels, mid game is your mid levels, typically like 5 to 7-ish, and then late game is like 7+. And so Pathfinder works really well in the early game. Like, it's super strong. It's a lot of fun. The rules make sense. But as you move into that mid to late game, you're drawing from so many different source books. You've got all these bonuses, multiple attacks, tons of feats.
Cross-classing.
Yeah. You can multi-class. You can hybrid class. You can prestige class. Like, it just... like, it becomes so
You can go
much,
to class.
It becomes so
You start getting
much,
companions.
Yeah, you can pick up the leadership feat. At level 7, you can start to get followers. I mean, there's animal companions and stuff. It becomes a lot to deal with. And it's fine if everyone, I think, is an experienced player. It's not so bad. But again, if you run into anybody that's not really sure what they're doing, the game will grind down pretty quick. And then you run into this issue where, like, the experienced players are getting bored, so they're telling the newbies what to do, and that's not fun for them, because you want to make your own decisions in combat and stuff. You don't want to feel like, well, why am I even here? This guy's telling me exactly what to do and when to do it. And it's not that they're doing it out of a sense of being mean. They're just doing it because, fuck, man, your turns take like 15 minutes, so we've been playing this one battle for 2 hours. This sucks.
Right.
That problem, that grindiness that Pathfinder became, really is what pushed us or inspired us to come up with our own. We basically cannibalized what we liked from multiple different areas and then just kind of stitched them all together into something that made sense and was quick and was fun. And we could just wrap around any setting we wanted. Like, we've used it to play a zombie survival. We used it to play a fantasy Old West shooter. We played Mass Effect with it. Like, it really, with just a little bit of adaptation, you can play whatever you want with it quickly and efficiently.
Nice. I want to play that.
And we will.
We need to find some time. I need to check this out.
Yeah, I mean,
I agree.
I won't cover all of the rules here because, yeah, like you said, in a future episode, we're actually going to be playing an RPG on the podcast in a setting that we haven't quite determined yet, and it's going to be a more lighthearted, so it's entertaining to listen to.
Are we going
to
do the homebrew system?
Yes, and we will be using
What's up?
The homebrew system, which I'm tentatively calling SDS or Streamline Driven Story. Is my working title.
Ooh, look at you.
I know.
That
right?
Sounds fancy.
You've captured my attention.
So when we get to, but yeah, I'll go into more details on the nuts and bolts of how exactly that works when we get together to play that. Probably coming up within the next couple shows, we'll get around to doing
nice.
That. Go right into the one of my favorite topics, bad players. Bad players, bad DMs. Let's start with the players and list out the different types.
I'll let somebody else go first because I have a least favorite player type. I want to see if anybody else has the same one.
Let's start with the lowball one, the easy one. The player who is not involved. The guy who's checking his phone, they've got their computer there, and they say they're using it for their character sheet. But occasionally you think you can hear Final Fantasy.
Okay, yeah. The one who's just there for the pretzels.
Yeah, they're eating the snacks. They're making their rolls when we tell them to roll.
They're treating it more as a social gathering. Like, they're just content just hanging out with friends and talking. Their main focus isn't the game. They would rather just hang out regardless of what people are doing.
You know, and it's perfectly fine to just want to hang out with friends, but when the purpose of the game is to play the game, to succeed at the game as a group, in a group dynamic, like, be involved or don't show up.
I mean, some of it could be the DM's fault, like maybe the game isn't exciting, but I've had games that were running really well, and I've still had someone do that the whole time, to the point where, like, are you having fun? And they always seem like, oh yeah, I'm loving the game, but every time we play, you're doodling or playing on your phone. It's distracting.
Oh man, so the one of those players was the DM. He was playing a full character in his own game. And then also doing all the other stuff, but he, like, made special rules and changes to the rules that only he was really aware of. So his character was a badass, and the rest of us just kind of wandered after him and pretended we knew what we were doing.
Oh, God.
And then it got to the point where he was just kicking ass so much, and the rest of us can't do anything, that two or three people would just have their computers out, just playing.
Hunter, what's a bad player?
There are so many to choose from.
No, not specific names. We're going types.
Oh, okay.
So don't name people.
You got lucky, James.
What are their feelings?
What?
I would probably go with probably the zany type. You know, the ones who derail the campaign.
Super silly and the class clown.
Yeah.
Yeah, the jester.
I mean, what? It's fine if you're actually playing a jester.
Yeah, you can play the wisecracking, joke-making character, but it's almost like they're working out their psychological issues in-game. Like, I just want to murder people, and this is as close as I can do it without going to jail. I'm sorry that your dad didn't hug you enough, but quit ruining our game. So what about yours, Adam? You seemed very specific in your hatred.
Oh, man, the min-maxer. The guy who comes in with his pre-done build with nobody else gets to play the rogue because I figured out how to kill the entire party by level 3. Like, that guy.
Hey, Dave. He's talking about us. Mostly you and partially me.
Mostly you. No, here's the thing. Like, you guys create the character you want to play, and you play them really, really well. My specific beef with the min-maxer is the guy who creates his character for the sole purpose of running the whole damn thing by himself just to prove he can. Like, if you want to win, all-out slayer, you can make him, but let the other people play.
It depends on the setting. Like, if I know the game isn't going to last, then yeah, I'll min-max the shit out of it. But it depends on the setting. Like, so the one that you ran, Adam, I ran about the opposite of min-maxing as you can get. Like, I ran that dwarf that was super old and had narcolepsy and would constantly, like, he had Alzheimer's. Like, the opposite of power.
Still survived every encounter I threw at you.
Maybe, almost. Then I had those delusions near those golems that you had, and that almost spelled the end of me. Like, your wife and Coulter had to work extra hard to save me.
That was a close one. But people like you, you have a real talent, and I'm not disparaging your guys' abilities to create these phenomenal cosmic powers based off of these itty-bitty rules, but it's the people that do it strictly to watch everybody else sit back and go, well, fuck it, I guess I don't get a turn. And they take some kind of like delightful glee in making everybody else miserable because they're the ones that get to do all the actions, to get to have all the fun. Yep. And you can, if you want to make your character, play him moderately, be part of the group, and then when the big bad shows up and everybody else is on the ground with like zero hit points, you're like, all right, check out this combo, and then let her rip, I'm all for that.
Because you can make a good character. Like, honestly, everyone should try to make the best. I mean, obviously make a character first, but then try to make the most effective you can. I think there's a difference between making a good character and then making a broken one. I think when you roll over from really good into broken, like, that's where that min-max. It's not that they're making the best they can. They're making something that's busted. Like, the rules should not interact in that way. But because it doesn't say that you can't, they do it anyway.
Yeah.
For instance, The Magus with the infinite shocking grasp, in third edition there was this kobold build that you could do where essentially you became a god because of like the way the crazy spells worked, but that's where that's an issue. This isn't fun because you're an infinite murder machine and we're all here to carry your loot.
Yeah, it's like go to Wizards of the Coast and be like the White Hat Hacker and say, like, listen guys, I have a dozen different ways that I can break your system. Let me introduce you to them because I enjoy doing this. And you guys go ahead and fix your system.
And honestly, like, if you run into that in your game, like, the DM should obviously get a handle on that immediately. But like, hey, you need to change your dude or either dumb him down or play something different. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, you're all there to have fun. And if one dude is broken, everyone else is his loot carriers, the game will die. Like, sure, you're really awesome and you got to show off, but people are not going to keep coming back.
And that would be really the definition of your good versus bad DM. One that would say, oh, you're right. The rules technically would allow for that. We're not going to do that in my game.
Yeah, like, for example, like, in the games that I run, like, when I was still doing Pathfinder before switching over, like, okay, guys, anything out of this advanced player's guide is a no-go, because due to personal experience, every class in this book is busted.
I still disagree with you.
They all are,
not
that,
but not all busted.
Which ones in that book aren't busted?
Alchemist isn't busted.
Are you kidding me? I watched that firsthand. Logan's growth. Like, those bombs are fucking ridiculous. I'm level 3 and I'm dealing 66 area of effect damage.
No, God. We did it wrong. Remember? We did the grenades wrong.
Not to mention, like, his skin can pop off and do missions for him. He's growing weird. He's growing weird kidney monsters. He's vomiting spiders. That class is super broken.
Whoa!
All those things that have to be
Geiger shit going on here.
I mean,
he also
grew
giant bat wings.
Don't get me wrong, it's a cool class. It's just not balanced to the other ones.
Okay.
I think my least favorite, and it's the rules lawyer. Like, it's not that egregious, but for whatever reason, it's like nails on a chalkboard for me. Like, it really bums me out. Like, anytime it doesn't go in their favor, they are right there, man. They are devil's advocate. They've got their law books according to Roe. You see, according to Roe versus Wade, and they list out all these different, according to source book A and paragraph B.
Wrong.
And it's funny is they'll only bring it up when it's detrimental to them. Maybe not even the group at large, because most rules lawyers won't argue stuff for other players. They'll just, it's mostly just themselves. They're super selfish, and they will just argue with you till you're blue in the face, and they'll do it in the middle of the game. FYI, if you're a player out there and you've got an issue with the game or another player, for the love of God, bring it up during a break or before and after. Don't fucking slow the game down with your nonsense.
I think my favorite time that happened was your brother and Anthony arguing about what each other's character could do for like 15 or 20 minutes.
Oh yeah, I remember you getting so pissed off. You were just like, fuck it. You just threw your dice up and just left. Like, you just went outside. Like,
you bailed?
Like, well, he didn't bail, but he went to go smoke just to calm down. But we all didn't know that. It's just in the middle of the argument, like, this is fuck it. And he just changed to sleeps, which is the correct response to wasting 30 minutes of your time with bullshit. And when stuff's benefiting them that is in the rules, they won't say a fucking word. Like, for example, I had a guy in the one of the last Pathfinder games. Like, we'd had some player shakeups, so we got so desperate we were randomly pulling guys in from Roll20, which is hit and miss. Like, we've had some great instances, like
Hunter.
Exactly, we found Hunter. And
I'm so great.
It's true, you are. Some not so great guys, like Captain Rules Lawyer. They're in this battle. They're fighting some dwarves. It's an evil campaign. And Hunter's character is this crazy big minotaur, and they're kind of getting their butts kicked because the Rules Lawyer was playing the rogue, and he didn't roll for traps, didn't investigate. He was almost like a combination of the guy that Hunter mentioned where they were trying to derail the game on purpose and a rules lawyer. Like, he was a hybrid shitbag.
Very evolving.
So, like,
wow.
Everyone's making
nature, like, finds a way.
Everyone's making so everyone's making their pre-battle plans, and then he just says, for whatever reason, fuck it, pushes the door open, which sets off some magical traps, alerts the dwarves they're fighting, so they're really getting pressed. So I'm like, okay, I need to figure out something to kind of swing it back in their favor, or else we're going to have a total party wipe. And I don't mind total party wipes if the entire party is being shitty, but if one person makes a bad decision, it kind of sucks to punish everybody for one retard. So I'm like, okay, so Hunter scores this critical hit, and describe it, like, he splits the dwarf in half, like, just completely explodes this dwarf. I'm like, okay, make a free intimidation check, which isn't in the rules. You don't get to do that, but it made sense. So he did it, and I think he critted his intimidation check, actually. So these dwarves are like, oh, God, this is the greatest minotaur that's ever lived. He's going to hit us so hard our ancestors down the line will feel it. So they all just flee. And so it turns the tide back in their favor, and they're able to – I mean, they were hard-pressed, but they were able to win. But he didn't say a word. Like, that's not in the rules. You can't do that. You don't – there's a feat that allows you to do it later, but Hunter didn't have the feat. So he didn't say anything. But later on, when something went against him, he just whined and bitched and drug the game down, and it was awful. So I hate that player just because it kills game flow. But yeah, let's shift over to bad DMs.
Well, I can't speak from personal experience. Probably railroading. Oh, when they build a railroad in the middle of the session, like,
awful.
Yeah,
no, I'm kidding. It's
spikes.
When they force the players to do things or make different specific decisions, like forcing them to go into an inn and then forcing them to not investigate any other rooms and taking away player choice.
Yeah, you might as well just be sitting there listening to him read his short story to you,
which also probably isn't very good.
Very good point. That kind of lack of storytelling or story involvement. It's all telling, zero involvement.
No role play, just the game part.
The number one goal of these games is, I mean, it's not a game that you win or lose per se. Like, there's no real, like, they just keep going on. But, I mean, to have fun, like, that's the golden rule of role-playing games. Like, every player mm-hmm. should be there to work towards that goal, and your DM should be what I call the facilitator of fun. Like, he's in charge of making sure the fun, all of the fun levers and fun pressure is adjusted right.
You know, okay, just a thing that didn't make it into the opening trivia, but I just thought I'd throw it out there. There's a guy that they did an interview on, I think, at for Dragon Magazine. He has been running the same campaign with the same group of people twice a week for 34 years.
That's amazing. Like, talk about lightning in a bottle. A, you have to, like, lock down just a superstar group of players, and you also have to, your lives have to be in such a way that, like, oh, I've got kids, or I graduated and I've moved. Like, the stars have to align so that you're all able to. That's crazy. Like, super jealous, but yeah, that's an amazing feat.
Oh yeah.
What about you, James?
I'm going to re-reference that when I was talking about before, where the DM is playing a character in the game, and it just makes it a really shitty time for all of the other people playing.
He's a combination of the DM, like the antagonistic DM, or the DM versus the player. Like, he's a subsect of that, I would say.
Like, it's not, I'm going to destroy all you guys. It's, I'm going to prove I'm better than all of you.
Mm.
Yeah, not only can I run this game, but I can play a character better than anybody, and I'll prove it.
And I don't see how he runs it, because, like, I don't know, maybe the way I do it's different, but there's a lot that goes into running a game. Like, you got to balance encounters, you're running all the NPCs. Like, I don't see how he has the time or brain power to do all the things a good DM should do and run a character at the same time. Like, it's madness.
It's because he does. He's going to be a railroad. He's going to say, this is what my character is going to do to lead us to this next situation, because this is the story I want to tell.
Like, the game master is like runs a healer for the party. If the party doesn't have a healer,
no,
doesn't
never.
Do anything, just occasionally helps.
Never. It never works out. Never run a character as the DM. Just don't do it. As Admiral Ackbar would say, it's a trap. Yep. Because honestly, like, you can design the campaign in such a way you can get around not having a healer. Like, you can run different encounters. Like, sure, you won't be able to throw all the nuts at the players all the times, but you can run the game without a healer. It's more tricky, but just never run a character as the DM. Don't do it. Too much work.
That makes sense.
It's too much work, and you run the risk of outshining the party. Because honestly, the spotlight should be on your players all the time. What about you, Adam? What's your DM?
The quote unquote the opposition. It's the DM whose EPing is directly proportional to his challenge rating. So everything that every corner you turn, every dungeon you go into, every open space that's suspiciously quiet is going to be just overwhelmingly bad for everybody involved, and he's just going to giggle the whole time he's rolling fake crits behind his DM screen. Yeah, just a waste of everybody's time. It's like, you know what? If you want to kill everybody, then just wipe us out as we're leaving the inn at the beginning. Like, just bring the flood in, kill us all, and let us go home.
Rocks fall. Everyone dies.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
What about you, David?
Jeez. I'm trying to think what I don't get to play as a player very often, because mostly I get assigned to the DM role, but, and so it makes me kind of picky, maybe even overly picky, like critical, as far as, cause I've seen behind the screen so much that, like, when they make mistakes, it's harder for me to, like, look past them, if that makes any sense. I guess I'd probably just, the one that's most frustrating is the one that's similar to a rules lawyer, but it's the rules DM, where they use every, like, it's printed in the source book, so by God, we're gonna fucking use it. Do you like keeping track of arrows? I sure do. We're going to do that. Encumbrance? Well, let's measure everyone's weight. No, it slows down play, and it's awful. And I guess it stems back to way back when me and Adam first moved to where we live currently, there was a game store. And then so he had found it first, and he's like, oh man, I found this mecca of gaming. Because again, we were both from just rural ass Nevada, like nothing like this. So when we discovered it, it was
under,
like,
the bush.
It's like, it was like finding the Garden of Eden after just wandering in the desert. And so he's like, oh man, I found this game and there's a DM and it's going to be great and come play with us. And I'm like, I don't know. But he talks me into it because he has that weird power when it comes to certain things. Like, for example, when he goes on a vision quest to rent every movie in Hollywood Video. And this was before the time of unlimited plans. So he – I think you probably got pretty close before they shut down at like $5 a pop of renting everything.
Yeah.
And I do mean everything. We watched Flesh Gordon and the Cosmic Cheerleaders where he fucks
– That was a mistake.
Where he fucks – where their rocket is powered by chicken sex and – they hit an impotence field, and he has to fuck the chickens to avoid going into the asteroids.
Yeah, I legit thought it was going to be Flash Gordon. It was not.
I thought of our new campaign setting, guys.
Oh, God. So, I mean, yeah, so he – I mean, so we watched everything, and I got suckered into it. But so he's like, come play this game. So we show up, and for 6 hours, we fought a handful of skeletons on a beach. That's what we did. We factored in encumbrance and, like, weapon velocity, and it was awful. Like,
time of day, how much daylight there was.
Whether or not you could drink 8 cups of water.
Yeah. I was just, like, just sore. Like, just physically sore. Like, it just, like, fat dudes have been sitting on me for an hour. Like, it was awful. Like, just a splitting headache, and I'm like, never again! Never again! That guy, and then the super, super underprepared DM. Just like, oh, I'm running a game? All right, let's do this. And they try to wing it, and it's awful. Like, oh, come on, man. Like, we get to play this for so little every week. At least, I mean, don't write the Lord of the Rings trilogy and develop this crazy world-ending story or world-building, but at least put an hour or so of thought into it. We're getting close to that time, but let's finish it out with a favorite story or a memorable moment from everybody.
No. All right.
Oh, you jump. You sounded excited. What do you got, Adam?
I'm going to go with the last fleshed out campaign that we played here at my place. I have a nice little gaming table that was custom made with drawers and everything. And we're all sitting in my basement around my little custom table, and we're all drawing up characters and having ourselves a great game. And my wife's playing, and she's learning how, and she's having a great time. And Dave constructs these really great stories that we all get to help flesh out as we play. Yeah. And we've had a few kind of mini boss battles, which really took its toll. Like, he pushes the challenge rating right where it needs to be, right in that sweet zone. But we're down in this, in these catacombs, and all of a sudden, you know, this skittering and this cold chills, and it's just horrible sound. And everybody's like freaking out, like, what was that? And above us is this massive spider, and grabs one of us, pulls us up in the air, and starts skittering away through the maze. And so we're sprinting after him as he's screaming, and we can all see this in our heads. Like, it's super clear to us. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be bad, because obviously we're going to go into some Zelda. There's going to be this huge battle. And sure enough, we're in this Zelda-like massive room, and there's going to be this huge battle. And it's hanging from the ceiling, and it's poison dripping from its fangs, really well described. And we roll for initiative. And my wife wins the initiative roll. And she is a hell of an archer at this point. And so she goes, okay, I'm going to shoot it with this specific ability, which I can use as many times a day. And I'm going to roll my dice, and I'm going to use this arrow and fire away. Like, nat 20, critical hit. In just the perfect spot. Called shot. Kills the thing in one shot.
Yep.
And what? Dave is like behind his screen, just not knowing what to do next.
Yeah, like, I spent all the time preparing the boss monster. Like, I had my sheet out. I'm like, here's his abilities. He's going to use this first. And I was getting all that ready to keep the combat flowing. And she's just like, ka-chunk, ka-chunk.
So I had a really good laugh. That was a fun moment. I really liked that one.
And you gotta leave moment, like, some flexibility if you're a DM for moments like that to happen, because it'd been super easy to be vindictive, like, oh, I spent hours developing this boss monster. He clearly would have survived, and there's that temptation to, like, to do that. And but
to
players
fix what you think is a problem. But yeah, but in the end, like, let the awesome moment, the awesome memorable moment be awesome and memorable. Like, let it happen.
Exactly.
You don't need to fix it if it's not broken.
You don't, yeah. I mean, you had just as much fun with an insta boss kill, and it's, you remember it. And maybe you wouldn't even remember that story if you had fought the long drug out battles. Like, be flexible. Leave.
And that would be the takeaway from that for me, would be, like, you know, it was unique enough to be absolutely memorable, and it wasn't broken, so it didn't need to be fixed, and it was a fantastic moment.
Well, thanks to Adam, mine's going to seem very unoriginal. Once again, first campaign, David was the game master. The party had to fight this spider-themed person. It was kind of like a mermaid, except spider instead of fish.
Oh, a half spellcaster, half spider, pulled from Forgotten Realms.
Our archer actually managed to decide, hey, I want to look at the ceiling, where sure enough the boss was lying in wait, and actually does get a critical hit, same as Adam's story, and drops the boss pretty quickly.
Yeah.
She had this cool ability to marionette you with puppet strings and...
Yeah, I guess I just got to stop running spider boss encounters, because people will just...
Shit happens with spiders, dude.
So that was cool. Yeah, note to self, don't make giant spider bosses, because people will just... What do you got, James? Hopefully it's not a giant spider boss.
Well, the first campaign I ran with you in 3.5, and we'd already run into a few moments that made us super paranoid about traps, like any good party should be. So we open this huge room, and we've got two people who can heal with us. We're like, okay, we gotta be real careful. We've gotten screwed over a few times now. All the fighters will go in first, and the healers will stay back. So everybody walks in, nobody checks for traps. They put their foot down on a pressure plate, the doors slam shut, sealing the fighters into a room with an acidic slime they can't damage, and the healers on the other side about to be attacked by wolves or something. Viciously stabbing this acidic slime, and it is busy viciously melting all of our equipment because it's made out of goddamn acid. Marty's trying to shoot it with his bow, and he's missing because he played the worst archer in the world in that campaign. Almost hit us way more often than he hit the enemies.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Just every single time he rolled, everyone was just like,
I move away from Marty.
So we're ping and slashing and just tossing rusted, melted, shitty weapons on the ground. Like, okay, what else do I have in my inventory? And eventually somebody had something that actually damaged it a little bit, and we eventually killed it.
And like, anybody that's played MMOs has probably experienced where your party is running in and nobody's timing it correctly, and then the zone locks out and your healers are locked out. Like that's happened to me more than once. And so it ends up being just this god-awful wipe fest every time.
What do I go as my favorite? I think it wasn't a good moment, but it's just one of my favorite because it was funny and it happened to befall one of the problem players we were discussing. Problem player types. Anytime something bad happens to them, it kind of brings joy to my black heart. I'll change the names to protect the guilty, but we were playing with, it was a game with Shit Druid. And it's not necessarily, we call him Shit Druid because he was a Shit Druid. And it's not necessarily his fault, like in hindsight, like this is kind of where it hammered home the rule, like, okay, in the future, I should not let the really new players play complex classes. Yeah. And he wanted to play the Druid. And I'm like, whatever. It's his first game of Pathfinder ever, and I don't want to step on his toes. He can play what he wants, even though technically I should have, because James had wanted to play a druid. But because that guy is selected first, I gave him preference. Probably shouldn't have done that. James was super pissed.
Yeah, that happens every time we play, by the way. Oh, I guess I'll play a fucking cleric again.
Yeah, because he keeps wanting to prove to me, like, dude, druids can be good. I swear to God, I've got a build. It's going to be great. And then it never happens because the newbies pick druid before he can, and he gets stuck playing the healer. So anyway, Shit Druid, just awful. Like, there's too many to mention here. I'm sure we'll do a future episode, and I'll tell more of them. But needless to say, his antics were legendary every single game. And so this was the first time that he had actually died because of his antics. And it wasn't even my fault. It wasn't a bad encounter. It wasn't unlucky rolls. It was James's fault. He was the first slayer.
I take offense at that.
He was the slayer of Shit Druid. Technically, you slew him, even though it was his own actions that put him in that situation. So anyway, they finally get to town. They've been on the run, forces of darkness, world ending, blah, blah, blah. And they've been harried and harassed, and they finally got to a place where they can take a breather for a moment. And they've saved up some treasure, like probably like a month's worth of grinding. So they've got like 5,000 gold, or give or take. And they're like, oh, thank God, we're finally in a town. We can buy some shit. Because they've been leveling up. They just haven't had a chance to stop or purchase any equipment. So they've been looking forward to doing some shopping for quite some time. So they get into town, and along the way, they've made enemies of the Iron Ring Thieves Guild. And so this is a major city, so the guild has a branch there. And they're not really secretive about it. They weren't thinking about it. They just march into town. So, of course, the Thieves Guild picks them up because they're on the lookout for them. They're headed into the market, like, yeah, we're going to spend this, and they're dividing up their coins, and everyone's kind of like you do. Like, everyone's got their paycheck, it's Friday, they're at the mall, and they're, I'm going to go to Spencer's Gifts and get, like, a shitty shirt with a glow-in-the-dark leaf on it, and, oh, man, I'm going to the B. Dalton's, and I'm going to get the Kama Sutra book that's in the back that you first discover when you're, like, 11. So, like, that kind of thing.
Good examples.
Yeah. And so they're down this alleyway, they're heading to the market, and they get ambushed by the ring. And to make sense, like, the tank type enemies were on the bottom, and the spellcasters and healers were up top, slinging pain down on the party. So rather than wait, Shit Druid just goes, because he has his animal shape change form. So he shape changes and flies up to the roof and then changes back so he can deal with the people on the roof. And druids early game are kind of bad. They're not awful, but they're...
Again, like, it's... Man, you've only played with bad druids. It's not true.
I don't know. I'll reserve judgment until you finally get to play a druid. But anyway...
Never happened.
So he shape changes, flies up to the roof, and he's 1 versus 3. And very quickly he learns that I made a bad decision because they are laying into him. Like, he doesn't even, like, he gets dropped to negative hit points. He's bleeding out. And so in a desperate attempt to save him, I don't know why, but they have a bag of holding. So two of the players go into the bag of holding. A third player launches. It was James and another guy. James is playing basically a fire sorc, and I forget the other guy who got launched up there. But anyway,
it's important to note that I was a halfling, and he, like, we looked it up, and we were just under the specific weight for going into a bag of holding combined.
Oh, that's right. It was
so you actually met the requirements.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So they launch themselves up like a deudapult, and they burst forth from the bag, and they quickly dispatch two of the guys, and the third one, she was the enemy spellcaster, and so she starts to flee. She's like, oh shit, I'm outmatched. I got one of them down, but I can't do any more. Because I tend to run the bad guys where they're not – if they're intelligent, they're not suicidal. So if the battle shifts, they will flee as players would do.
Realistic.
So, yeah. So she's like, fuck it. I'm out of here. I can't take on these three guys. So she starts to leave. So James had just recently got this spell, which was Memory Lapse, and he'd been dying to cast it. Like, this was his first chance where he was running up against an intelligent creature, he could cast it. He didn't really think out the implications of what that spell would do. So for those that aren't familiar, Memory Lapse will cause you to repeat the action that you did last. And her last action was to cast Magic Missile on the enemy druid, which was what dropped him into the negative. So he's in the negative. He can't defend himself. He's completely helpless, unconscious, bleeding out. Shit. So James casts Memory Lapse, thinking that will stop her, and then they can overtake her so they can question her or kill her or whatever. And sure enough, it stops her, but it's her turn in the initiative order next. So he lapses her. She spins around, and she gives, oh, I was doing Magic Missile on the druid. That's what I was doing. And she had more casts of it left. She was just fleeing. So she casts it again, kills the druid, just slays him. Like, there's no pulling punches. He had, like, 2 hit points left. And James was like, oh, shit, man. Like, the look on his face, because none of them saw it. To be fair, nobody saw it coming. Like, none of the other players. It wasn't like they were screaming, no, please stop. Don't do that. You're going to kill me. None of them understood what it would do. And I'm just sitting behind my screen with this, yes.
Let the shit druid die.
Let the hate flow through you. And so, like, and so he casts it. I'm like, okay, she spins around and begins to cast Magic Missile on the druid. And then it instantly, you could see it click in James. No one else saw it, but he's just like, oh, fuck. And then there was a small spark of, you know what? I'm not all that sad that this is about to happen. And so she obliterates him, kills him. So then they get into this great argument, because now they have to spend 90% of their hard-earned wealth to have him resurrected, because it costs like several grand to have somebody resurrected at a temple. And so all this money that they've been saving for, they were going to buy all this fun stuff, now had to be spent on resurrecting the shit druid. And
oh, you couldn't just let him die?
That's what I was. I was all for letting him die, but he was playing with his girlfriend, and he had another friend there. And so he and his girlfriend and his friend all argued. And then, to be fair, Anthony and James said, well, okay, now we get a greater cut of future treasure, and if this happens again, we're not I'm going to spend the money. This is his freebie. And any treasure cut that he gets is sent to me and Anthony's character and then split in half. So it wasn't a total wash. They had to talk him into it. But yeah, they lost all their treasure to resurrect Shit Druid. But it's that time, man. We are at their end. We could keep going on forever. We'll have a future RPG episode, to be sure. Look forward to next week, where we're calling old versus new. Look forward to that, where me and Adam will be squaring off against Hunter and James in a score/completion competition, where we'll be playing the original Super Mario Brothers and Clue Land.
Clue Land.
I did not stutter. You heard me right. That is a launch title for NES. I had no idea that game existed until doing research for next week's show. That is a real game, and we will really be playing it. I'm sure it's going to be awful, but tune in. We'll tell you all about how awful it was.
I ordered a SNES USB controller.
Yes.
Computer, so when that comes in, I'll be able to actually game on it.
But until then, from all of us here at the Dude Discussions podcast, until next time, they're coming to get you, Barbara. She'll blind you with it.
Oh, God.
Good heavens, Miss Sakamoto. You're beautiful. You see, guys, that was a song from the 80s. James and Hunter don't remember that song.
Are you trying to suggest I've never heard She Blinded Me with Science?
Yes, that is what I'm suggesting. Have you?
That sounds really familiar.
How dare you?
She blinded me with science.
Science! There she goes again. She's moved all my tubes and wires. I can't find anything.
God damn it.
I've heard that song so many times, and I still have no fucking idea what that thing is about.
I assume it's just for that movie.
Oh, was it in Weird Science?
Weird Science. It's like the theme song.
No,
dude.
Weird Science is the theme song to Weird Science. That's a completely different song.
Oh, fair. They do play that song in that movie, though.
I'll have to look it up. I don't think it is, but I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong. Anyway, let's do this.
RPGs, part 2.